Every Thursday in the month of May, we explore how the COVID-19 pandemic is affecting the global economy. We've partnered with the Becker Friedman Institute at the University of Chicago to bring these stories. And checking in with us again is Tess Vigeland, host of the podcast Pandemic Economics. Tess, welcome back.
Thank you. Good to be here.
And Kate Baker is Dean of the University of Chicago's Harris School of Policy. Kate, it's good to have you with us as well.
Thank you.
Tess, this week's episode is about super spreaders. Is there an elevator explanation of what a super spreader is?
Yes. You know, it's so interesting listening to your last guest talk about shifts in paradigms. And I feel like the paradigm that we've been hearing right now is like, it's that all of this is about lives versus livelihoods, right? As we start to open up, it's lives versus livelihoods, and it's this binary decision that we have. And the fact is that when you look at the data, especially that that Kate and her co-authors looked at, and she can tell you some of the details of that, you realize that this is not a binary thing. When you are making decisions about which businesses you are going to return to as states open up, there is data that can show you which ones are riskier to go to and which ones are less risky. And so when we talk about super spreaders, those are the ones that maybe are a little more risky right now, that maybe need a little bit of time before you start repatronizing them. And this is all based on cell phone data, which, and I just find it absolutely fascinating. And, you know, a lot of times economics is not super practical, but in this case, it's very practical because it can help you make decisions about where you're going to go as we all start to come out of quarantine.
Kate, how did you collect this data using the cell phones? How did you use the cell phone data?
Well, we started off using the cell phones to map which businesses have the most people in the smallest amount of space, who stay for the longest, who come from the furthest areas. And that's a high-risk situation because there's a lot of opportunity to spread the disease, and you're spreading it to a much bigger network of people. But, of course, that's not all the information you need. Cell phones can't tell you how much customers and employees interact with each other physically, whether people are touching the same objects and common surfaces. So we added some survey data to the cell phone data to get a more complete picture of how risky each kind of enterprise was.
And the cell phone data, there are some potential problems, right? People have pointed out that if you're going to a low-income neighborhood, if people own fewer smartphones, it could appear that they're less busy than others. And as you say, they don't tell how the customers behaved when they got in there. So how solid is this, the usefulness of the data you collected?
I think this is a great starting place, but it's definitely not all the information we need. And the factor you point out of being sure that we're capturing information across the income distribution and for different neighborhoods is really important. So we've been digging in to make sure that we've got representative data for every neighborhood because we know the effects of the pandemic are really disparate across income and across areas, and it's vitally important to capture that. And, you know, we've added on, as I mentioned, data about how much touching of common objects there is and, you know, how much customers and employees interact. But another piece of information that's really important is how businesses are modifying what they're doing in response to the risk. So we think this is a great starting place to think about which businesses are safest to open now, but also to think about how we might modify business as usual to make even more places safe to open. We're seeing a bit of that with restaurants doing curbside pickup or delivery instead of dining in. There's a lot more we could do in that dimension as well.
That's really interesting. And Tess, in this week's episode of the podcast, Pandemic Economics, you take a pop quiz and you fail.
You were you have to point that out.
I did, actually. You were asked which business would be more of a spreader, McDonald's or Ben & Jerry's. You chose...
I chose McDonald's. I mean, I just really thought, you know, McDonald's are packed. There are a lot of people in there. I mean, this is how I visualize
lots of
a
children.
McDonald's.
Yeah.
Is that children are there. Everybody's running around. Every booth is full. And so I just assumed that it would be the place that I would want to avoid much more than a simple Ben & Jerry's ice cream shop.
And yet the answer was, Ben and Jerry's.
Yeah. And, you know, we're a bunch of professors. We can't help giving quizzes every chance we get. And that's exactly right. The intuition, I think, that most of us would share is that a fast food restaurant would be riskier. And that's why it's so important to have data on these things, because even though a lot of people come through a McDonald's, they're spread out over the whole day and they're not staying very long. Whereas at Ben and Jerry's, if you're most people, you're probably going after dinner or on a hot summer afternoon, not for breakfast, although I have a co-author who really likes ice cream for breakfast, so I get in trouble every time I say that. And you also might think that a McDonald's would be riskier than a steakhouse or a sit-down restaurant. But again, at those sit-down restaurants, people stay for longer, and so they interact with more people for more time than if you're just zipping in and out of a McDonald's. So there's a lot of surprise in the data.
There is a lot of surprise, and I wonder if you would go through some of the companies that ended up ranking high on your spreader scale.
Sure. I think, you know, there are types of businesses that are particularly risky, places that have, you know, people staying in a small area for a long time, gyms, you know, lots of people would like to get back to the gym, and some gyms are really spread out. Some gyms are a little more concentrated, smaller footprints, and that small footprint is a problem. Some steakhouses like, you know, the Texas Roadhouse, maybe that's not to call out just one example, but it's an example of the type of place that might be riskier. You might think that florists and barbershops or nail salons would be pretty similar, but again, if florists, you're not touching a lot of objects. You're not interacting with a lot of customers at the same time. So even with the same foot traffic, they look pretty different. So I would watch out for places where a lot of people come to a small area for a long period of time and browse around the goods, used clothing stores, electronic stores. Those are places we're kind of used to lingering, and maybe we shouldn't be lingering so much.
Yeah, so go ahead, Tess.
Yeah, the electronics store that she mentioned was actually one of the more fascinating ones to me, and they compared, say, an electronics store to a lawn and garden store. And again, I probably would have gotten this wrong had I had this on a quiz, because I just wouldn't have thought about the fact that people spend twice as much time at electronics stores as they do at lawn and garden stores. And lawn and garden stores are probably most likely have a much bigger footprint in terms of how big the store is. It's probably, a lot of it is going to be outdoors. So there are just factors that seem counterintuitive. So that's where the data becomes so important.
I also think people are much more likely to be touching everything at an electronics store. I don't see a lot of people like caressing the peonies in there.
Well, I do, but that's just me.
Well, there is also, go ahead, Kate.
Yeah, similarly, think about used clothing stores like the Salvation Army. You've got to look through a lot of racks to find the thing that you really want. And so you're staying longer and you're touching everything and you're trying on a lot of things. So that's another risky place to be.
And the data found that people spend three times as much time searching through those racks at the Salvation Army than they do scanning shelves at a Dollar General. I mean, in a way, Tess, this is making us sort of reexamine our habits when we're out in public.
Absolutely. And, you know, that's something that can be overwhelming. I mean, all of this is overwhelming already, right? But when you start thinking about the places that you want to go, the places that you need to go, the places that are now starting to reopen, it can be almost paralyzing to try to figure out what's safe and what's less safe. And so that's where I think that this kind of research is so incredibly valuable in helping us make those decisions in a time of such unprecedented uncertainty.
So, Kate, you said that this is a good starting point. What other data would you like to collect that might refine your results?
Our data comes from a period before COVID as a baseline. How did people usually interact at stores? Of course, over the last couple of months, things have been shut down. So there isn't really data you can use from a period of businesses being closed and people sheltering in place. As we start to emerge again, it's going to be really important to update this data in as close to real time as we can to gauge what patterns look like now and point to places for modification. And, you know, economists are often called the dismal scientists. This is, we're known for delivering bad news in a monotone, but this is actually potentially good news in that all of the variation we see means a lot of business can resume relatively safely. So if we just are mindful of these factors and creative in thinking about new ways of doing business, whether it's metering people into stores so density stays low, different ways of deciding who goes on which days, different ways of browsing without touching, I think there's a lot of opportunity to minimize risk, which means we can start doing more things sooner.
I'm Celeste Headlee. You're listening to 1A. So, Tess, this is going to give us some lessons on how people can reopen. How much variation do you think it might make? And I'll ask this question to you as well, Kate. How much variation will be determined by the behavior of the business owner?
Well, it certainly seems like a lot of it would be. I've had stores here. I'm in Portland, Oregon, and for the last month or so, there have been several grocery stores that are doing exactly what Kate talked about, which is they are metering how many people come in at any point in time. And so you have to wait in a line outside. So that's a decision that some businesses are making already. There are businesses that are also making decisions about whether to require masks. So it's happening now, but I think what really struck me about Kate's study was, again, how counterintuitive some of this was. Say, bookstores. I wouldn't have thought of a bookstore as being a risky place to be, and I love bookstores. But the fact is, you probably are going to spend a lot of time there. There is a lot of touch contact, and so it is actually one of the places that is a little more risky. And so maybe those business owners also didn't really think about that. So it's data like this, and there's so many other examples that you can hear on the podcast. Data like this can really, I think, be helpful not just for the people who are going into those businesses, but for the business owners themselves who are making those really important strategic decisions.
Yeah, I actually would have thought of bookstores as being very high risk because people stay there for ever. And in my bookstores, they find a seat somewhere and sit down and they touch all the books and read them.
Yeah. Well, you would have gotten the quiz right and I would have gotten it wrong.
Well, again. I would have chosen Ben and Jerry's. I would not have chosen Ben and Jerry's. Let me just say that. I would have gotten that one wrong. And I wonder at this point, Kate, did you find some businesses that are inherently low risk?
Yeah, businesses that are conducted mostly outside are likely to be safer. So those, you know, lawn and garden centers we mentioned, or parks or historic sites, maybe those are safer. I was also surprised that convenience stores aren't as risky as you might think. You think of a lot of people coming in a small space, but people spend very little time there. You zip in, you zip out. And so those places that you can do your business very quickly seem like good places to think about reopening and maybe reallocating where you go. And your point about things that business owners might do is really important because, of course, the employees at each of these places interact with a lot of different customers. So making sure that they are healthy and safe, that's really crucial to getting people back to work safely for the sake of the employees as well as the customers.
So, Tess, the point of Pandemic Economics, the podcast, is to identify things that are changing in global economies because of the pandemic. And I wonder, looking at this study and this data, do you think business owners might make real changes that would be permanent?
Well, that's a really good question. I don't have a crystal ball for that, but it certainly seems like even some of the changes that are being made, in stores, in restaurants, that they can be beneficial in the long term. Whether they will keep things the way they are, who knows? But, you know, as we all know, unless and until we get a vaccine for this, things are going to be very, very different, not just here in the U.S., but around the world. And so I think, you know, as businesses are able to look at data like this, they'll be able to make decisions both both for the immediate future and also, you know, potentially it's information that helps them in the long term as well.
And as you mentioned, vaccine could take a long time. So when you talk about immediate future, that could be a year.
That could be a year or two. Yeah.
Yeah. Tess Vigeland is the host of the podcast Pandemic Economics. Her guest on this week's episode of that podcast is Kate Baker. Kate is Dean of the University of Chicago's Harris School of Public Policy. Thanks so much to both of you for being part of this series. You can listen to Pandemic Economics on Stitcher, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and Google Podcasts. And you can also find the 1A podcast wherever you get your podcasts. It is a great way to catch up on shows you might have missed or guests that you really want to hear from. Now, before we go, we'll continue this tradition that we started more than a month ago now. We've been collecting your stories about acts of kindness and then, of course, sharing them. And today's story comes from Alex in Bretton Woods, New Hampshire.
For the past 3 years, I've been a crisis counselor with this great group called Crisis Text Line. And honestly, throughout the time period that has been this whole COVID pandemic, it seems like that we've had an influx, at least from what I've noticed, in new crisis counselors, people wanting to help others, people wanting to, you know, be there for emotional support and also to help people find the resources to get through all of this.
That is awesome to hear, Alex. I am a volunteer for Crisis Text Line as well. It is a great organization should you or anyone else feel you are in crisis. Today's producer was Charla Freeland. This program comes to you from WAMU, part of American University in Washington, distributed by NPR. I'm Celeste Headlee. Thank you so much for listening. This is 1A.